Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org. Hello, this is Michael. Jack will be reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, April 17th. However, the first article had a technical difficulty, so I'll begin the reading with the top of the front page from today's MRT. City. Nursing home cases continue to spike. Wilson says we must protect the vulnerable and the aged. By Stuart Doreen. The community seemed fortunate that there weren't any coronavirus cases at local nursing homes. This week, those fortunes changed. The Midland Health Department has reported 9 confirmed cases this week, and all but one are connected to 2 nursing homes. Health Department officials have revealed the number of workers and residents with COVID-19, 6 workers and 6 residents having tested positive. All but one of the long-term care facility cases are connected to Midland Medical Lodge, 3000 Mockingbird Lane in North Midland. The other is a resident at Manor Park in West Midland. Those 12 total cases are more than one-fourth of the 41 confirmed cases in Midland County. We spoke about that a number of times over the last couple of weeks, that our primary concern isn't those asymptomatic carriers and those that have minor illnesses and stay at home in quarantine, but it's the aged and the vulnerable, and long-term care facilities have aged and vulnerable people by definition, said Dr. Larry Wilson, Chief Medical Officer for Midland Health. So anytime you consider that kind of environment, it's of concern. Wilson said that Midland Health has been in contact with nursing homes across the city to put into place best measures to minimize and mitigate the exposure of others in those circumstances. Over the last several weeks, Manor Park and other long-term care facilities have done a remarkably good job of making sure all their patients are kept away from one another. So, they're all dining in their rooms, and they're separated from one another. Anybody accessing the rooms washes in and washes out. They've been very, very careful about exposure. Wilson said the patient at Manor Park, a male in his 90s, has been asymptomatic and has been isolated and quarantined. He was screened going in because of the concern. We hope that will contain the disease in that particular environment, Wilson said. As far as Midland Medical Lodge is concerned, the first person from that facility who tested positive, an administrative staff member, was confirmed on April 3rd. Midland Health Department officials on Thursday said there was low concern for the situation about the confirmed test, because that person was excluded from work and they started implementing personal protective equipment for staff in the facility. It wasn't until after the first resident at Midland Medical Lodge tested positive that the health department made the public and family members of residents aware of confirmed cases. All totaled, the number of positive cases inside Midland County has increased from 32 to 41. That total is still lower than all but one of the other higher population metropolitan areas of West Texas. On Thursday, the Texas Department of State Health Services reported 393 confirmed cases in El Paso County, 367 in Lubbock County, 172 in the counties where Amarillo is, 79 in Taylor County, and 40 in Tom Green County, the San Angelo area. The Ector County Health Department on Thursday reported 55 confirmed cases. Wilson reiterated that Midland County residents not have a false sense of security. He said it is expected that Governor Greg Abbott will issue an executive order next week with guidelines on reopening businesses in the state. He said as long as the coronavirus pandemic is still taking place, all proactive measures, social distancing, good hygiene, and cleaning surfaces are still necessary. I think it's very, very important that we remember this is not some kind of a validation that we have the virus under control, Wilson said. We still have a viral pandemic going on, and it remains a serious threat to all of our citizens, particularly the aged and the vulnerable. And this really is our opportunity, as we do get back to business and get back to work, that we do it in a way that we remember those things and do everything in our power to protect the vulnerable and the aged.
Where are they now? Trinity alumni help locally beyond during pandemic. By J.C. Lewis. jacy.lewis@hurstnp.com. Trinity School of Midland has been sharing Facebook posts about alumni helping locally and beyond during the coronavirus pandemic. Shelby Hammer, the head of school at Trinity School, said there are a lot of alumni who are on the front lines of making good things happen at this difficult time. We wanted both for our alumni to note that we recognize and appreciate what they are doing, and also they are great role models for our current students who are thinking about what their next steps might be. To put that in front of our current students and help them develop their thoughts about what their future could hold. Before the pandemic, Trinity School hosted alumni panels earlier in the semester that brought alumnus from different professions to campus to speak. All those people came back to campus, and we did a large group session with all of our upper school students. But then our juniors and seniors also got to do a breakout group with them and sit down in a smaller group with a field they were most interested in. She said the alumni love coming back and seeing their school while also meeting current students. Hammer said current students also like seeing that there's life after high school. She said, as an independent school, they are completely run by their mission. Trinity School's mission is as a college preparatory community that provides a nurturing environment to enrich the mind, strengthen the body, enliven the soul, and inspire servant leadership. When we think about those four areas of mind, body, spirit, and leadership, everything in our program is directed toward at least one of those areas. Starting from the youngest ages, our kids get involved in servant leadership and giving opportunities. Hammer said that seeing how alumni have been helping during the pandemic gives a great sense of satisfaction to know that lessons the school has worked on so hard to impart have taken root with students, and students carry them into the world. If you talk to alumni, they'll tell you, "I knew from the time I was at Trinity that it was important to help other people however I could, and that doesn't necessarily mean just giving money." Kylea Walker, who graduated from Trinity in 2009, has been helping care for people locally. She sent an email that she started working at Medical Center Hospital in 2012. She started as a nurse intern and then received her registered nurse degree in 2013. She then worked in cardiac and ICU units until last year. She now works for ProCare, Odessa Heart Institute. Walker said she has always wanted to be in healthcare. "I have always been a natural caregiver. I always felt the need to care for my grandmother and father with their various ailments," she said. "I have always hoped that I could make a difference in the community by giving back and helping patients improve their health and daily lives." She said attending Trinity School taught her how to better care for others, especially in smaller groups. "This helps bring people together, and everybody gains a better understanding, and empathetic relationships can blossom. The coursework at Trinity School helped prepare me for my college courses, which gave me a slight edge in regards to being able to study more efficiently, stay focused, and only helped improve my work ethic and drive." Walker said the pandemic has affected the patient volumes as well as minimizing the number of elective procedures. "It has been difficult not knowing what is to come," she said. but she has been uplifted by the support of colleagues and family. Trinity taught me to strive to be the best I can be, and I carry that with me in my career still. Alumni who were highlighted in a Facebook post from March 20th include Brittany Rothbone, class of 2013, on the front line in New Orleans fighting coronavirus in the ICU. Craig Stoker, class of 1995, is the director of communications at West Texas Food Bank. Michelle Carter, class of 2012, is a doctorate of nurse anesthesia student in the simulations lab at TCU. Austin Green, class of 2012, is a PharmD and MPH public health advocate at a clinic in Dallas. Alumni who were highlighted in a post from March 21st include Bill Fleischman, a former head of middle school at Trinity, donated blood in Florida. Dr. Heather Bartlett, class of 1998, built a tent for triage and evaluation in Ohio. Casey Snipes Smith, class of 2004, is upper school lead administrator in educating students virtually at the Clarendon School. Beth Webster, class of 2011, is the director of prevention for the Life Center in educating and counseling students and parents in need. Alumni who were highlighted in a post from March 24th include Susan Strange Green, class of 2007, a physical therapist providing home exercise ideas for patients. Dr. Emily Newman Dodd, class of 2006, an anesthesiologist serving the community in San Angelo. Dr. Sheena Patel, class of 2012, has been swabbing patients for coronavirus at a drive-through testing center in Houston. Lydia Jackson, class of 2005, is a registered nurse supporting patients on the cardiac floor in Mobile, Alabama. Alumni who were highlighted in a post from March 27th include Lexi Willingham, class of 2011, a nurse practitioner student in the medical ICU trenches in Lubbock. Kelly Hoos Johnson, class of 1997, an emergency manager in Utah at a drive-through POD operation for testing. Laura Quinn Sonnenberg, class of 2007, a physician's assistant treating family medicine patients in Midland. John Mark Eccles, founder of the Fields Edge, class of 2007, is arranging hand-washing stations for homeless people who have lost access to restrooms and washing facilities. Alumni who were highlighted in a post from April 2nd include former student Kirby Winstead, who works in the ICU at UT Southwestern, Morgan Kuehler Gray, class of 2016, reports on a coronavirus from KUT, Austin's NPR station, Lindsay Frisenholm, LaPuka, class of 2013, is a physician's assistant student volunteering at testing sites in Fort Worth. Margaret Coffey, class of 1991, is a naturopathic physician working in a community health care outreach in Montana. Alumni who were highlighted in a post from April 7th include Cameron Salehi Kelly, class of 2004, participating in a coronavirus antibody testing initiative in Colorado. Dr. Jite Kim, class of 2011, is a resident with Baylor University in Houston. Kalia Stevens Walker, class of 2009, is a nurse practitioner caring for cardiac patients at Medical Health Center Health System. And Katie Borland, class of 2009, is a music therapist at a children's hospital. Local and state news. Report. 5 more quakes occur near Pecos. From staff reports. 5 earthquakes have shaken the ground west of Mentone during the past 6 days, according to the website earthquaketrack.com. The site shows earthquakes with magnitudes from 2.6 to 3.4 taking place 25 miles west of the Loving County town and further west since Saturday evening. Earthquake Track reports 24 earthquakes have taken place in the area around Mentone, which is about 22 miles north of Pecos, in the last 30 days, and 121 quakes have been recorded in the past 365 days. The most recent took place at 8:01 a.m. Thursday. The 3.1 magnitude quake took place about 44 miles south-southwest of Loving, New Mexico, or basically due west of Mentone, according to EarthquakeTrack.com. The first of the most recent string of quakes was the strongest, with a magnitude of 3.4, and occurred about 10:11 p.m. Saturday. The site showed it to be 45.9 miles southwest of Loving. The second happened less than 3 hours later. The 2.7 magnitude quake occurred less than a mile closer to Loving, according to EarthquakeTrack.com. The third tremor, magnitude 2.6, took place around 4:54 p.m. Monday near the site of the two other quakes. The fourth and one closest to U.S. Highway 285 in Mentone happened around 5:15 a.m. Tuesday. The 3.2 magnitude earthquake was reported 25 miles west of Mentone. All earthquakes were reported at a depth of around 3.1 miles, according to the EarthquakeTrack.com. A quake with a magnitude of 2.5 to 5.4 is often felt, but only causes minor damage, according to UPSEIS, an educational site for seismologists. There are about 30,000 quakes each year, according to the site. ECHD reports first nursing home case, seven more cases, from staff reports. Ector County Health Department Director Brandy Garcia said during a Zoom conference on Thursday that Ector County confirmed seven more cases of coronavirus, including a 72-year-old who is a resident at Madison Medical Resort. The Ector County total is at 55, she said. The county has tested a total of 631 people with 516 negative and 16 pending tests. Garcia said 23 people have recovered from coronavirus in Ector County. Medical Center Health System President and CEO Russell Tippin said MCH has tested 31 positive people with 6 positive patients are being treated at the hospital. 4 of those positive patients are in the critical care unit, and 3 of the 4 are on ventilators. 2 of the 6 positive patients are on the isolation floor. MCH has tested 242 negative patients, and 47 tests are still pending. The hospital has 7 persons under investigation, with 1 patient in the critical care unit and 6 are on the isolation floor. Tippin said that MCH will be testing employees at Madison Medical Resort, and Odessa Regional Medical Center will be testing the facility's residents. ORMC President and CEO Stacy Brown said ORMC has tested 137 people with 9 positive, 115 negative, and 13 tests are still pending. Riddick, return to campuses is a long shot, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at MRT.com. Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick sees students returning to campuses for the last month of school as a long shot, no matter what Governor Greg Abbott said later this week or moving forward. Riddick said even if the governor allows students to return to schools in early May, he said that would be a very difficult scenario to look at based on what is occurring in the community. Such a scenario would put students in classrooms 18 days from now and in school for around 3 weeks before the end of the semester. The district students currently are learning online using Google Classroom. Riddick told those watching the Unified Command Team press conference on Thursday that students who need a Chromebook or hotspot device for Wi-Fi should contact their campuses. He also said MISD is still providing about 11,000 meals a day. Riddick reminded Midland ISD families that meals will be provided once a day, beginning Monday, instead of the twice-a-day format now. The lunchtime service will include a breakfast for the following morning. Riddick said the decision to bring back about 30,000 teachers, students, and other staff will be made after talking with officials from Midland Health and the City of Midland Health Department. We will make the best decision for our community. To bring 30,000 individuals back into buildings, I see that as a long shot. Midlander creates algorithm to predict likelihood of infection. Determination would be made using person's genetic makeup and medical history. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. A Midland data scientist and his two partners have created an algorithm that uses a person's genetic markers and medical history to predict someone's likelihood of becoming infected with the coronavirus and suffering complications from it. Midlander A.J. Rosenthal and his partners Dan Brew of Oklahoma and Warren Geek of Alberta, Canada, filed patents this week related to the algorithm. Rosenthal said it could use a person's genetic makeup in combination with various factors, such as their medical history and types of exposure they've had, that is, a minor exposed to coal dust, to determine someone's risk factor and assign them a correlating score. We're describing potentially where a person would fall, give them a score, and that score allows them to either start going back to the workplace because they're not going to succumb to the disease, or they won't even be susceptible to it. The algorithm would use the medical histories of those who have been hospitalized with COVID-19 to determine what markers could put a person to risk. He described inputting the data from past patients as training the algorithm. The goal of this project is for the information to be widely accessible. He said the algorithm could possibly be on a website where a person could enter their medical information after signing a HIPAA privacy release. What we're trying to do is, if people want this, and we're hoping they do, is to make it easier for them to feel comfortable and safe going back out, he said. Because they've now been locked in their houses for weeks, they don't know if they're going to get sick. They don't know if they've even been susceptible to it. The algorithm could also be applied to other viruses and diseases, but the trio has chosen to focus on COVID-19 because there's an immediate need. The project's success is contingent on partnerships with other entities, primarily with medical providers who would give access to the medical histories of past COVID-19 patients. HIPAA laws prevent that data from being publicly available. Rosenthal pointed to studies linking ACE2 receptors in the lungs to COVID-19 as evidence that a person's DNA could be used to predict their risk of being infected. Some studies have found the coronavirus uses these receptors to infiltrate cells in the body. When the coronavirus attaches, it has a certain type of envelope that it attaches to. Your receptor on your lung is a lot of the coronavirus sticks to it, and from there it propagates an infection. Some health entities worldwide have advised against using ibuprofen to treat COVID-19 because it's thought to increase the number of ACE2 receptors in the body. But there's no clear consensus among the scientific community about whether more of these receptors create a higher risk of contracting or having complications from the coronavirus. Rosenthal said the algorithm could determine if certain combinations of medications and genetics were frequently present in those infected with the virus and serve as a guide to those with similar DNA who are also on those medications. A former multidisciplinary engineer in the U.S. Navy and at General Electric, Rosenthal currently works for an oil and gas company in Midland. He said he and his partners, who met working at GE, were inspired to take up this enterprise by their kids, who want to go back to school and go to the mall and play baseball. We're just three dads. We just want our kids to have a normal life again, Rosenthal said. Maybe these three dads can help the world. The only thing we've got left to lose are our jobs or the economy. City. Four virus cases sets new one-day mark. From staff reports. A new one-day mark has been set for confirmed coronavirus cases. The Midland Health Department reported four cases on Thursday. Three of the cases were connected to Midland Medical Lodge, a skilled nursing facility in North Midland. That brings the number of the cases connected to Medical Lodge to 11, and the number connected to nursing homes to 12. One is a resident at Manor Park. The four new cases were tested at a Midland Health location, and the source of exposure for three was contact to a known case, while the other was community acquired. The city also reports the following about the four cases. The 38th case is a male in his 80s and an inpatient at Midland Memorial Hospital. The number 39 case is a male in his 70s who also is an inpatient at MMH. The 40th patient is a female in her 40s and is self-isolating at home. The 41st patient is a female in her 20s and is also isolating at home. MMH reported Thursday that 969 total samples have been tested and 840 have been negative. Officials are awaiting results for the other 80. The Midland Health Department reported Thursday that 23 of the 41 confirmed cases have been female. 20 of the confirmed cases have recovered, and another 4 have completed isolation. Another 6 are patients at MMH. Obituaries and death notices. Dorothy Evelyn McQuarrie, 89, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, April 14th in Midland. Dorothy was born October 23, 1930, to H.L. and Beulah Madison in Rusk, Texas. She married Vernon McQuarrie on October 17, 1947. She worked at Midland National Bank in the early years of Midland, a bookkeeper for Kent Oil Company for many years, and later retired from HCW. She is preceded in death by her husband, Vernon, daughter Sheila Green, and son Michael. Dorothy is survived by her children. She has also been blessed with 14 grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, and 9 great-great-grandchildren. A private graveside service will be held at 2 o'clock on Saturday, April 18th at Cahoma Cemetery in Cahoma, with Pastor Jeff Franklin of Kelview Heights Baptist Church officiating. A celebration of her life is pending due to the restrictions of the coronavirus. Due to this pending memorial service, we request that flower tributes be sent when that service can be held at Kelview Heights Baptist Church at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Joanne Willard Youngblood passed away April 11th. Joanne was born in Carlsbad, New Mexico on May 15th, 1938. She is survived by her husband John, son Todd, and several grandsons, stepchildren. She was preceded in death by her late husband, Dr. Ronald C. Willard, and daughter Kelly Bowers. Joan was a member of the First Baptist Church of Midland. Services were held in Jal, New Mexico. Arrangements were under the direction of Ellis Funeral Home, Midland. Sherry Dawn Pippin Hatfield, age 64, formerly of Brownfield, left this world and arrived in the arms of the Father on Easter morning, April 12th. She was born on February 27th, 1956, bringing with her a joy and a selfless spirit to Ormel and Lacey Pippin of Tokyo, Texas. She was the only feisty sister to 4 older brothers. She is survived by her brother Sidney and several nephews. You are loved and will be missed by all. We pray for each other now as we all learn to live without your light. Memorial services will be announced at a later date. Beth DeSegler Thomason, 62, of Leesburg, Florida, passed away on April 7th in Midland, Texas. Texas Beth was born on July 27, 1957, to Alice and Oscar DeSiglier in Niagara Falls, New York. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Jerry Lynn Young, 58, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, April 14th in Midland. Jerry was born on March 17, 1962, to Patricia and Leslie Young in Clovis, New Mexico. No services have been scheduled at this time. Mark E. Thomason, 55, of Leesburg, Florida, passed away on April 7th in Midland. Mark was born on July 28, 1964, to Joanne and John Murphy in Bowling Green, Kentucky. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, April 17th, 2020, Section A. Community Caring. Credit Union Helps in COVID Fight by Sam Waller. Employees and staff of Complex Community Federal Credit Union helped produce and distribute 1,000 face masks to Permian Basin hospitals battling the coronavirus pandemic. Complex Community spokesperson Lisa Wyman said the project included all levels, from CEO Jason Berridge on down, and all levels of sewing experience. We had a couple who are really expert and a whole bunch of novices, Wyman said. It's quite a process to make one. It took us a little longer than we thought. A whole bunch of people even took them home at night to work on them. The project came about as social distancing guidelines and shelter-in-place orders left Complex Community with little business to conduct. We're pretty involved in the community, out at different events, supporting different organizations, very involved with the schools, Wyman said. One of our team members heard about making medical masks. We kind of scratched our heads because we're not professional seamstresses. We did some research and figured it out. We decided we were going to make 620 masks. We wound up doing 1,218. We were going to make 10 masks for every year we've been serving the Permian Basin. We thought we'd celebrate an anniversary and come up with a number that way. Wyman said Berridge heartily approved the idea, but upped the production to 1,000 masks. The masks were distributed Thursday to hospitals serving every community that we serve: Big Spring, Crane, Monahans, Andrews, Midland, and Odessa. Wyman said about 30 Complex Community employees took part, just a handful of whom sew. We have two quilters, and they were instrumental, she said. I have sewn for years. My grandmother taught me how to do it. And we've got a couple of other girls who have machines who really don't do a whole lot of sewing. I think the coolest part, though, was teaching others how to do it, how to thread the machine, how to press their foot, and all the other things that go along with it. It was amazing to me that when we announced this, how many people walked up and said they didn't even know what a pincushion is, but they'd do whatever they could to help. Our CEO was ironing. Our runners were making bias tape out of fabric that we could trim the masks with. We had loan officers and tellers and everyone in between cutting and ironing and sewing and pinning. After that, Wyman said, helped keep employees involved in spite of restrictions on gatherings. I think what it did is, in a very difficult time when there's a lot of uncertainty in our world, people can join together for one common goal and see it through to the other side, she said. I think it gives you hope. When you're putting your hands to work for someone else, it reminds you how fortunate you are. with more than 200 masks left over. Wyman said the surplus was put to good use. What we did was open that up to our staff and said if anybody wants to buy one, or if they have a loved one or a family member, what have you, we're going to sell them for $5, she said. We're going to take that and put it in our March of Dimes fund. COVID happened right in the middle of the big March of Dimes fundraiser, which is the walk. So they're kind of hurting financially. For us, it was kind of a win-win. Wyman said Complex Community has plans for other community involvement projects in the planning stages. We do have two projects in the works for ECISD, providing some morale and support to them, she said. We haven't gotten everything approved through ECISD yet. At the end of this month, we'll be packing 20,000 meals for the West Texas Food Bank. Every year we work with the AVID students in the district. They help us pack meals, and then the kids determine where those meals go. Nursing Patient Positive by Michael Merlot. A third Ector County resident, a man in his 60s, died late Thursday at Medical Center Hospital. And the county also has the first COVID-19 positive case in a local nursing home. Madison Medical Resort Administrator Greg Fuller said that when one of their nursing home residents tested positive for COVID-19 Wednesday night, he went to meet with staff to start the CDC guideline adjustments, and that now residents and employees are being tested for the virus. The resident who tested positive is a 72-year-old man. This is the first case reported in an Ector County nursing home. Fuller said Thursday that with our screening process with our direct care staff, we now wear face shields and gowns, and that now with the first positive, the staff has to wear PPE suggested by the CDC. He said that the resident who tested positive didn't have any symptoms and that he was taken to the hospital for other complications, but that the man started showing symptoms while at the hospital, which is why he was tested. Further, Fuller said that they are now adding more CDC precautions to their daily routine. If we see any signs or symptoms, then of course we notify the physician right away. And depending on what they are, they would take them to the hospital, and then there they would decide if they wanted a test or not. He added that residents will stay in-house and that they are taking employee and resident temperatures every 4 hours. The man who tested positive, Fuller said, is still in the hospital. Ector County Health Department Director Brandy Garcia said over the phone Thursday morning that there was a positive COVID-19 in a local nursing home. She reportedly told CBS 7 News that she was pretty sure the nursing patient was from Madison Medical Resort. Garcia told the Odessa American she didn't know which facility or if the person was a nursing home resident or employee. She had to confirm information with the department epidemiologist. When asked if the Medical Center Hospital had contacted the EOC with that information Wednesday night, County Commissioner Dale Childers said, "We knew it, but it wasn't verified, so we're not going to release it." Medical Center Hospital issued a press release at 10:28 a.m., and it reads, "A nursing home patient has tested positive for COVID-19 at Medical Center Hospital. The patient was brought in from a local nursing home Tuesday, April 14th. The patient was eventually tested for COVID-19, and the test came back positive Wednesday, April 15th. MCH officials immediately reported the test result to the Ector County Health Department. After hospital officials updated COVID-19 numbers for the public, Thursday's press conference was mostly media and county back and forth in regard to the county's continuous breakdown of communication with Ector County hospitals and the city of Odessa. MCH had released information regarding the nursing home's positive case Thursday morning, and when Garcia was asked why the county hadn't released any information regarding the nursing home, she said the city public information officer did send one out earlier today. There should be one that was sent out today that did verify, and the age, that it was a male, and then it will be on our website like all the other cases that we have, she said. When Mayor David Turner was asked if the city public information officer had put out a press release, he said, "We didn't." Garcia said that she sent an email requesting that a press release go out. During the April 8th online hospital conference, Childers said, "We are not using the PIO right now because we have this format right here. I think this is working pretty well." During Thursday's meeting, Childers said that they were again using the city's PIO. Garcia reported that the county has 55 positive cases, 516 negative, 60 pending, and 631 total tested. She reported that 23 people have recovered. Ector County has had 3 residents die and a 4th death of a non-resident. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said that MCH has 31 positives, 6 positives in the hospital, 4 in the critical care unit, 3 on ventilators, and 2 on another COVID-19 designated floor. 242 tests have come back negative, he said, and 47 of those are still pending. He added that there are 7 persons of interest in the hospital, 1 in the CCU, and the other 6 are in the central unit. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown reported that ORMC has tested 137 people, 9 positive, 115 negatives, and 13 pending. Tippin said that both ORMC and MCH are putting together some testing for the residents at the nursing home and the employees. He added that MCH is going to handle the employees and ORMC is going to handle the residents. Commissioners look to slash budget. COVID-19 spawned cuts could be as high as 30%. Grappling with the myriad of problems caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, Ector County Commissioners Friday morning will view cuts in departmental operations that could run as high as 30%. Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers said Thursday that exactly what the panel would do was undetermined, but it would be necessary to address the crushing loss of revenues that has already been felt and the even worse drop in funding that may be expected next year. Dr. Timothy Benton, Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs at the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, will also be heard during the special 10 a.m. session at the County Administration Building. Benton said the following the court's regular Tuesday meeting, he would discuss possible COVID-19 testing. Childers said that if budget cuts are mandated, they will apply to all departments of the county government. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're looking at all our options, he said. We've already lost $250,000 at the Coliseum and in the Coliseum barns with carnivals, jackalopes, games, and other things. We have also lost substantial sales tax revenues. Next year will be the hard year with more losses in sales taxes and even ad valorem taxes. Precinct 1 Commissioner Eddie Shelton said Thursday, the next fiscal year's budget for 2020-21 will be lower in deference to the inevitable decrease in revenues, but employees' pay will be unaffected for the rest of the current budgetary year. We're trying to make preparations for the future, and we want to make everybody in the county aware of what's coming, Shelton said. There is no better time than now to start making preparations. The commissioner said all department heads had been asked to look at their budgets and see if there was anywhere that expenditures could be reduced. However, the situation was in a high state of flux, and departmental exigencies would be considered. Some departments may have room in their budget to cut up to 30%, but some may not, Shelton said. We just have to look at what might be feasible. COVID-19 news. By the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases 55. Ector County negative 516 out of 631 tested with 60 pending. 3 deaths. Midland County, 41 confirmed out of 969 tested. 2 deaths. Texas, 16,455 confirmed with 158,547 tested. Total Texas deaths, 393. U.S. cases, 632,548 total confirmed and 31,071 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. Telehealth. The Medical Center Hospital ProCare primary care physicians and specialists are continuing to provide quality care during the COVID-19 pandemic through telehealth visits. This allows established and new patients to visit with a doctor from the comfort of their own homes. Patients can connect directly with a provider from their smartphone, computer, or tablet. Simply call one of our MCH ProCare offices to schedule an appointment. For a list of providers, they can also visit procareodessa.com/find-a-physician or call 640-6468 for more information. Medical Center Health System and MCH ProCare want the community to know we are here for the community during these uncertain times and that we are dedicated to continue making sure West Texans are treated and taken care of. You can help. As frontline workers continue to help us fight COVID-19, the Ellen Noel Art Museum is making headbands that holds masks with buttons to prevent sore ears, and they are in need of community help. Donations of old cotton knit shirts, stretchy fabric, or buttons to help them continue to create headbands for Odessa Regional Medical Center, with a goal of 250. For those who know how to sew and have fabric and buttons at home, your help is appreciated in creating headbands. There is a donation box at the west door entrance where donations can be dropped off, contact free. For questions or information, email marketing@noelartmuseum.org. National Backyard Campout Breaks Up the Monotony by Tony Venegas. Joshua Leeper wanted to do something to shake up the regular routine of staying at home during the uncertain times caused by the coronavirus pandemic. He found a solution that didn't take long to find. In fact, it was literally in his own backyard. Leeper and his family are taking part in the National Backyard Campout today, which invites parents and families to set up a camping adventure to make memories, enjoy a fun night at home, and take the minds off of everything surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic. The Night Out is sponsored by Trail Life USA, a scouting group established in 2013, that is based out of several different churches across the country and describes itself as a Christ-centered, boy-focused character, leadership, and adventure organization. Leeper is one of the leaders of the troop that is based out of Colonial Bible Church in Midland. He is also the father of four, including three daughters and 9-year-old son Kipton, who is one of 15 members of the troop that was established last fall. With everything that's going on, the kids need some good stability, Leeper said. We don't want to totally remove them from what's going on, but we want to show that we can still have fun in our backyard. Trail Life USA will have a live broadcast on its website Friday night that includes a virtual story time. It also has suggestions for games, activities, and recipes for outdoor cooking. There is also the opportunity for families to share moments on social media, and the group will also be giving away prizes in the process. It's going to be a lot of fun, said Steve Paget, national event leader for Trail Life USA, said in a press release about the event. This is a great opportunity for families to spend time together and create memories and habits that will continue long after this homebound time is over. Leeper echoed that sentiment about his own family. He added that this event is something that Kipton and the rest of the family bought into right away when asking if they wanted to take part of it. It's a good chance to connect with the troop as well, even if they're not all together physically. We are outside the majority of the time at our meetings, Leeper said. Kipton is excited that he gets to share most of what he's learned with the rest of the family. He added that the troop typically meets every other Saturday and we're just getting established as a new group. That changed when the coronavirus caused the cancellation and postponement of schools, meetings, and other events across the country and the world. We got into a good groove with the regular meetings and learning the different skills that Trail Life offers, Leeper said. This is a chance to remind people that the outdoors are still there, even though we haven't met as a group in recent weeks. The 15 members of the group are spread out over Midland, Greenwood, and Seminole, according to Leeper. He says that there are a few other families who will be participating as well. Chevron donates $40,000 to Basin Boys and Girls Clubs. Chevron has donated $40,000 to the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin as part of the company's social investment and support initiatives to help communities and nonprofits address the COVID-19 public health crisis. These funds will be used for a variety of programs aimed at providing food for families, children, and older individuals, as well as ways to bring Boys and Girls Club programming to youth. Funds will also be used for basic operational needs to maintain the club both during and after the crisis, a news release said. Chevron has long been a supporter of the Boys and Girls Clubs in Midland and Odessa, and we are so grateful for their continued backing during these uncertain times, said David Chancellor, executive director of the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin. This era of a global pandemic will be difficult for the extremely vulnerable children we support, and we are so grateful to Chevron for helping us provide vital services for them. Programs that funding from Chevron will support include a partnership with the West Texas Food Bank, in which the Boys and Girls Club will be helping with food deliveries to those who are quarantined or shut in. This may include families and senior citizens who are unable to go out in public for a variety of reasons. In addition, the club has also created activity bags with the help of community partners that include books, STEM projects, crafts, and more that are being distributed during food deliveries and upon request. Already, the club has distributed nearly 4,000 activity bags throughout the course of the crisis. Chevron is proud to support the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin, their programs and activities, said Kaylee Dunn, Public and Governor Affairs Advisor for Chevron. Supporting our youth may look different during a public health crisis, but the mission remains the same. Thank you to the Boys and Girls Club and others who have stepped up to the challenge. Vitalant launches plasma program to treat COVID-19 patients. Midland. Vitalant has launched a program to treat COVID-19 patients with blood plasma donated by people who have recovered from the diseases, according to a press release Thursday. The release states that the blood component, also known as convalescent plasma, contains antibodies that may give patients an extra boost to fight their illness. In coordination with Midland Health, Vitalant is working to identify willing donors who qualify for this type of donation. The release still stresses that even with these requirements, there may be additional tests or other criteria required. In some instances, those who have recovered from COVID-19 may be able to donate even if they did not have an initial laboratory test. Those who meet the criteria and want to donate plasma are encouraged to apply through the Vitalant website at vitalant.org/COVID-free.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.